everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. How are you doing, people of the regular chat? Yesterday, I talked about the Trump indictment, and I didn't analyze it in full. Today, I had time to read it as Trump was getting arraigned. I'm not satisfied by this indictment. It is a very weak legal theory. Proving conspiracy requires proving a state of mind that the person knows they are doing illegal stuff. I don't see any evidence that Trump knew he was lying. To the contrary, Trump has been maintaining for years now, yes, there was election fraud. Now, you may disagree with him. You may think there may be dozens of people around Trump who have told him, Trump, this is false. That doesn't change that it is truly Trump's belief that the election was subjected to fraud. And that, therefore, his statements are not made in a way as to deceive or defraud. They are made simply to express a problem that Trump is taking with the current state of government, with the decisions that have been taken. Unfortunately for the prosecutors, that doesn't reach the point of demonstrating a conspiracy to defraud the public or to impede on a public process. So I think that any reasonable jury would conclude, and we will go through the detail, but when you have a situation that can be interpreted in five different ways, but one of those ways is not a criminal one, as a prosecutor, your responsibility is to say, I'm going to assume that he can prove that one in court. Trump proving that he had a genuine belief that the election was stolen is very easy for him to prove. No one in America doubts that he is honest, that he truly believes this. I mean, he's been very categorical about it, and he's held his point for years, even after being banned from social media. That's still what he believes. So you're not going to prove in court that all of these attempts to change the outcome, to activate the bureaucracy of America to contest the outcome of the election, you're not going to make reasonable people believe that this was all done in a conspiratorial and frauding type of way. That is the kind of evidence you would need to do a conspiracy case of that amplitude. You would need basically a recording of Trump who's discussing with his lawyer and saying, fuck them, we're going to lie to everyone. If you don't have this, you don't have a case. Now, unfortunately, this is 2023 and the jury is fucking retarded. And so it's absolutely possible that a leftist jury will be selected and that Trump will be imprisoned because of a genuine belief that he had. Unbelievable. That's the state of danger of living with fucking retards. Go Away says, Trump has been indicted so much that I'm starting to think he must be guilty of something. When there's smoke, there's fire. Know what I'm saying? Sad, I looked up to this man at one time, but turns out he's just a no-good criminal. Go Away, always a troll, never gives up on the trolling. But that's basically the internal thought process. That is what the leftist wants to achieve. So much persecution that people are going to think there must be something wrong here. Let's go through a few news before I do the full review of the indictment. First, we had a reproduction of this superconductor claim. I said that I would not believe the claim until serious scientists would be looking into it. I pointed out that, you know, it's a Korean team. They barely know how to write English. It's torturous language. And I don't know much of physics. I don't know enough of physics to say this is true or this is false. But I know if I'm going to trust a physicist based on how they explain their stuff. And I've decided that the sole claim of the article was not sufficient. But another team now has done the experiment. They show these graphs and they've done the test on YouTube. They were transparent enough to show it on YouTube, and they announced in advance that they would do the test, so we didn't know what would be the outcome, so we get to see the outcome of on video. There's all sorts of technical language that they say. The TC is not room temperature. The shape of this resistivity graph is pretty weird. He's talking about this shape here. He's surprised that it's going kind of curvy toward the bottom. Okay. They did not observe the levitation effect that had been described by the other author. And they point out, to be fair, 10^-5 is not zero, although it may be within measurement errors. So they're pointing to the fact that this is not zero. This may not be superconductance. It may just be very low resistance, and you know, keep that in mind. You can never prove superconductance beyond your margin of error of the quality of your measurement. Cosmic Nut was asking, superconductor, what is the fucking use to it? you know, the applications are rare because it's very rare that it's worth it to maintain the cold necessary for superconductivity to happen. You need to maintain it so cold that you're spending more energy than you are preserving. That being said, there are some special physics and imaging techniques that rely, I believe, on superconductivity. And of course, the dream of superconductivity is imagine that you could store energy in a superconductor and take it when you need it. You'd basically have invented the perfect battery. But none of the known superconductors make sense from this perspective, because they all cost a very high amount of energy to keep them superconducting. Superconductance has not reached a point where it is useful as a storage of energy, because you have to waste too much to keep it that way. And it has reached these very specialized physical and research-based and I think certain medical applications might require this. John Drake says, no free lunch. Exactly. Superconductivity always comes at a cost. The universe is such that there is always a loss. There is always something going wrong. There is always massive investment of energy for doing a small preservation of energy. It's always like this. And the second law of thermodynamics tells us that it's going to be that way forever. Latest replication attempt, and this one claims zero resistance. The paper is published as a video. Link in Alex thread, but here are my comments on the chemistry. So their strategy differed a little bit in terms of ratio of copper used to reproduce the superconductor. Conclusion, this paper shows alternative PB precursor is viable for producing this material. Making the synthesis more Cu and P rich did not lead to an apatite structure. Note the 1-1 synthesis is already Cu rich but P poor. Maybe other ways to add P could be considered. All right, so that's the whole LK99 material, as they have decided to call it. Well, not super. I'm not much more excited about it than I was initially. There is a funny meme video that was sent to me that's a commentary on French language, because I hadn't noticed, but we have a lot of words in French that are tante. Tante, ma tante, tin. We have different ways of writing these words, and they mean completely different things. But sometimes it's the same pronunciation, but a different way of writing will lead to a completely different sense. And someone made a meme video to show how ridiculous it can become.
Hold on.
Attends. Aunt. Tante.
So much.
Tant.
Time.
Tant.
Tant. Horsefly.
Tant.
Ten.
Tant.
Tant. Wait, your aunt is spending.
And so this sentence in French, wait, your aunt is spending so much of your time, you have so many horseflies in the tent.
So much of your time, you have so many horseflies in the tent.
And so in French, that would lead to attends, t'attends, t'entends, t'entends, ton temps, 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 attends, en autant de ton dans la tente.
Attends, t'attends, ton, 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 t'en as autant de temps dans la tente. Hold on.
I had never thought about this sentence. I had never realized that there are so many words that are in temps. T'attends, t'attends, autant, t'attends, tente, ton. Pretty hilarious. In fact, let's review the sentence again. Attends, t'attends, t'entends, tant, ton, tant, tant, t'en as autant de ton dans la tente. Oh my God. Jim Jordan launches investigation into Biden Facebook censorship scheme. The House Judiciary Committee has launched an investigation into a misinformation tracking group, the UK's Center for Countering Digital Hate, which is now being sued by X Corp, formerly Twitter. I love it. Elon Musk is going after the censors. He's going after them because they have been making public statements that, you know, advertisers should not advertise on Elon Musk's Twitter because he supports hate speech. And at some point, this has to be subject to defamation. There is a point at which your claim that they support hate speech is subject to a review under defamation law. So here, Jim Jordan has given 2 weeks to turn over records that could detail the extent of its ties to the Biden White House. We know from the Facebook files that the Center for Countering Digital Hate was working with the White House to censor speech. But how far did it go? Republicans want to find out, and of course, subpoenas are on the table if we don't get answers. Jordan's letter, which was first obtained by Washington Examiner, is the latest escalation of the GOP's effort to investigate how the federal government has, in some cases, coordinated with the private sector to flag certain speech. Absolutely fantastic. I love Jim Jordan. I think he's a great guy. I think he's been pursuing more aggressively than a lot of politicians out there, stuff related to the vaccine, to censorship. So I'm super happy he's doing this. And this is something we've been talking about for years, the delegation of censorship to private entities. So the government can't do anything against your speech, but they can play behind the scenes and say, hey, look, there seems to be a problem with this tweet. Could you check this out? And it's like, well, in the end, you're dog whistling to private companies to harass other private companies so that speech is censored. That actually qualifies as a conspiracy against rights. in a fair world, you'd have the prosecutors be much more interested at pursuing the government agents who have participated to this scheme than they are at pursuing Trump, who's just an honest guy who believes that the election was stolen. Bill Maher says Democrats are full of shit when it comes to illegal immigrants. I love this first statement because it totally describes the situation with Bill Maher. Sometimes he's awakened, but most of the time it's too little, too late. Bill Maher may be a little slow on the uptake when it comes to his willingness to call out disastrous Democrat policies and irrational leftist arguments, but at least he's not afraid to go against the grain when the epiphanies strike. That is a very good description of Bill Maher. It's like illegal immigration as a whole. We've been talking about it for years. I mean, we've had a whole presidency, basically one in 2016. On this issue as a forefront issue, the wall. The wall would stop illegal immigration. That is Trump winning this 7 years ago. Bill Maher is now starting to push back on the Democrats' support for illegal immigration. As Bill Maher notes, these city governments often pontificate on the virtues of the American melting pot until they are faced with housing and feeding thousands of migrants that pack the streets and the parks. Democrats support illegal immigration as long as they never have to deal with those migrants on their doorstep. A humanitarian crisis is forming in New York, D.C., Chicago, and it is entirely caused by the political left's unwillingness to admit that they were wrong. Absolutely, the very same people who vote for these Democrat policies will find themselves being the gentrifiers who concentrate in real estate spots that the immigrants cannot afford and that get away from the problem that they've created as such. Diamond Eyes sends a super chat on Odyssey. Thank you so much for supporting the show. By the way, if you'd like to support the show like Diamond Eyes, feel free to add a payment method to your Odyssey account. This will allow you to see the dollar button to send super chats on Odyssey. And Odyssey super chats are my favorite way to receive support for the show. Entropy is also a nice way to do it. The link to Entropy is in the description below. Diamond Eyes says, "Hi, JF, could you give your interpretations and or predictions based on the latest race data on suicide rates in the U.S.? Non-white suicide increasing, especially for blacks, while white suicide decreasing. Thank you." Okay, I wasn't aware of this data. Let's have a look at what it is. Suicide rates have risen among people of color. Whites were the only group to see a decline in suicide rate from 2018 to 2021. Well, I will first point out that to begin with, white suicide was very high with respect to normality and very high with respect to blacks, because the blacks, when they get involved in homicide, it's in killing other people. Whereas the whites, they kill themselves. So we're starting at a point, and much of the suicide issues were linked to situations of despair, which include addiction to drugs. There has been a fentanyl epidemic, opioid epidemic for white people in America, and it's highly associated with risks of suicide. So we're starting in the last decade with a very high white rate and a relatively lower black rate. Let's see what happened to the data. An analysis published by Thursday by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention shows that whites were the only racial or ethnic group to see an overall drop in their age-adjusted suicide rate between 2018 and 2021, with a decline of 3.9% from 18.1 deaths per 100,000 to 17.4 per 100,000. That occurred despite an apparent uptick in the group's rate between 2020 and 2021. Meanwhile, people who were American Indian or Alaska Native had the highest proportional increase in suicide rates among racial or ethnic groups between 2018 and 2021, with a 26% rise from 22.3 deaths to 28.1 deaths. The suicide rate among Black individuals increased by about 19%, the study found, while the rate among Hispanic persons rose by nearly 7% over that time. So, here we are. That is the rise that you said was happening to the Black population. 7.3 in 2018 rises to 8.7 in 2021. Now, you told me in your super chat, whites are going down 18.1 to 17.4. But I would point out, notice, they're going down, but they were already much higher. So in a way, the whites are bumping on their ceiling of their suicide rate, whereas the Blacks are probably on the floor of their suicide rate. When you are in a statistical situation where your data is extreme on one side and extreme on the other side, there's a phenomenon where it's like convergence toward the mean. There's a phenomenon where whites could only go down, and you know, it's not physically impossible that it could have went up, but if you're at near a ceiling, you're more likely to go down, and if you're at near the bottom, you're more likely to go up. That is just a statistical fact of normal distributions, of bell curves. So I would point out that this doesn't necessarily illustrate a social phenomenon of some kind. You don't necessarily need to think, oh, it's because of the BLM protest between 2018 and 2021. They had hope that combating Trump would save them, but they got Biden and their situation hasn't improved. Therefore, they're depressed and they commit suicide. That kind of explanation is not even necessarily needed here. So I can make up any sort of narrative like this. Like, why did white suicide reduce? Well, maybe some of the fentanyl epidemic is being effectively combated against. You know, maybe some of the attempts of the government to reach populations in despair could have worked on the white population, but could have not worked on the Black population. Because if you have programs that are meant to get people out of addiction, you're much more likely to have a Black population that is resistant to it and a white population that is open to it, simply out of the behavioral genetic tendency for hostility toward control, hostility toward authority in Black populations, and the contrary, on the white population, a willingness to basically a willingness to cuck to authority. So any of these mechanisms could explain some of what we're seeing here. Why did the Black suicide rate rise while the white suicide rate was going down? But given that we're starting from very different rates to begin with, I would be very hesitant at coming up with complex explanations when it's not even clear that one is needed. Perhaps it's just features of the age structure of the populations that differ. Perhaps it's socioeconomic status inclusion that differs. Perhaps it's all these things that could be playing out in parallel. Imagine there's a contingent of white people who become young adult, and they're more numerous in the young adult category in those specific years compared to the other race. then it's hard to do comparisons because you could have, there's just a larger contingent of white people that became 18 years old around this time. And because they were 18 years old, they had more access to drugs. And because they had more access to drugs, they were more likely to fall for suicide. All of this could be hypotheses. I hesitate at giving you one that I would feel confident in. Go Away says, JF, the reason suicide among ethnic minorities in the US is rising is because those that identify as ethnic minorities are becoming more mixed with white people as the generations go. They are inheriting more suicidal genes from their white or mixed white parents. Cultural mixing also. That is possible, but it's an evolutionary effect of race mixing that you're talking about. I would hesitate to invoke it on a window of time of 3 years. See, if we had all of the data for the last 100 years, maybe I would see something like what you're describing. But on the basis of merely 2 points of data spanning over 3 years, to invoke an ongoing evolutionary effect, a slide toward race mixing, especially in a society that, you know, race mixing isn't happening all that much, I would hesitate to conclude the way you did, personally. Okay. So let's start talking about the situation of Trump, who has been again indicted. At this point, it's prosecutorial harassment coordinated across the whole of the United States. And look at how the leftist media is happy. CNN with their big title. When they pull these big titles on the front page, you know they're not, they're super happy. Trump pleads not guilty to January 6 charges. We will review the whole of the indictment. We have seen today that Trump was arraigned. His arraignment hearing has concluded. He concluded by pleading not guilty. We will have a full review of the indictment to see that it's insufficient, basically. Insufficient, in my view, to seriously prove that Trump is engaged in a lie, in a knowing lie about the election. What it looks to me is that all of the actions that are reported in this indictment could be explained very easily by simply invoking the possibility that Trump, in his mind, truly believes that the election was stolen. And if you truly believe that the election was stolen, you're going to take the means to legally rectify the situation. It is not a crime to legally try to rectify a situation that you truly believe is fraudulent. Michael has sent a super chat. He said, regarding Europeans, can you tell from what part of Europe they come exclusively by looking at their phenotype? Well, there are certain things that you can recognize that will differentiate definitely Eastern Europe from a Western European. Will you get to the point of being 100% accurate on distinguishing between a French and an English, between a French and someone from Switzerland? Maybe not. But you have a certain degree of resolution that, yes, it's possible. Definitely, if you show me 10 different East Europeans and then 10 French people, I will be able to classify most of them properly. So before we get to the review of the indictment, let's listen to what Trump had to say when he came out of the indictment hearing.
Thank you very much. This is a very sad day for America. And it was also very sad driving through Washington, D.C. and seeing the filth and the decay and all of the broken buildings and walls and the graffiti. This is not the place that I left. It's a very sad thing to see it. When you look at what's happening, this is a persecution of a political opponent. This was never supposed to happen in America. This is the persecution of the person that's leading by very, very substantial numbers in the Republican primary and leading Biden by a lot. So if you can't beat him, you persecute him or you prosecute him. We can't let this happen in America. Thank you very much, everyone.
All right. Absolutely correct. And I was looking at some of the videos coming out of this arraignment hearing. And holy shit, is Washington, D.C. not doing good. Look at the filth and the protesters with their dirty flags. And it's really a circus. Look at this. I mean, there are some guys like this that are Trump supporters. But let's go through the video. And I want you to pay attention to the protesters, the homeless people, all mixed in.
To see Donald Trump go up in the poll 4 points. I expect to see Ron DeSantis lose 2 points, because that's what's happened at every indictment, because I've been to every indictment.
Look at the bunch of bizarre people celebrating the indictment of Trump. Those are the kind of people who rejoice in the destruction of someone else by legal persecution means. And that was a guy dressed as a prisoner to kind of represent the state of Trump as he will be imprisoned, and to celebrate that fact that he will be imprisoned. This is the coalition of the bizarre that is celebrating the suffering of another human being, celebrating the harassment of another human being. All right, so what do we have to prove in this indictment for it to make any sense? Count one, conspiracy to defraud the United States. Count two, conspiracy to obstruct an official proceeding. Count three, obstruction of an attempt to obstruct an official proceeding. And count four, conspiracy against rights. So for any of these things, I have to have evidence from Trump's mouth himself that he knew that election fraud doesn't exist, that he was actively lying, and that therefore he was pursuing a true obstruction of an official proceeding, not merely trying to perfect an official proceeding. Because whenever you have a legal path done by the government, whenever you have a process, a proceeding, you're going to have some differences in the employees of the government, the president. Various people will think in various ways about what needs to be done for this to be properly run. The election is the same. How to properly run an election and what needs to be done if it's not been properly run, there will be various beliefs. Some will want to do A, some will want to do B, some will want to do C. It's not a crime to believe that C is the right way to do that process, even if you're proven wrong later by the standard of other experts. Even if there are liars who tell you, no, that C is not good, you should do A. Sometimes there are options. Sometimes there are different ways to handle an official proceeding. And for me to have a belief that this indictment suffices for any of these four counts, I would have to have a clear evidence that Trump believed inside of him, that he truly believed that the election wasn't stolen, but that he would still say it to the people and deceive the people toward believing that. Mark D's channel says, how dare he try to obstruct the biggest electoral fraud in history? John Drake says constitutional liar. Alan Dershowitz says the Supreme Pizzas will overturn any conviction in about 2 seconds. Okay, so you believe that Trump would eventually be saved by the Supreme Court. I also think it's a very likely outcome. If the jury is too militant, too activist, I think it wouldn't be surprising to see a Supreme Court that comes in and says, for some technical issue that they find, they will say, all right, we're throwing that verdict out of the window. So let's see what Trump is supposed to have committed. The defendant's conspiracy to impair, obstruct, and defeat the federal government function. So the federal government function is the election. Through dishonesty, fraud, and deceit, included the following manner and means. So if you want to say fraud, deceit, and dishonesty, you need to show that Trump knew it was false. The defendant and co-conspirators use knowingly false claims of election fraud to get state legislators and election officials to subvert the legitimate election results and change electoral votes. So the problem with this accusation is knowingly false. How did Trump know it was false? Someone may have told him it was false. Is he forced to believe that someone? If I have two people coming to me and they say, JF, the lady in the blue dress committed the murder, and someone else says, JF, that's false. The lady in the blue dress did not commit the murder. And I decide that one is more persuasive than the other. I have the right to develop my own belief that, yes, the lady in the blue dress committed the murder. Am I being fraudulent because I decide to believe person A rather than believe person B? Perhaps person B didn't make the best case. Perhaps they were poorly dressed and they were not inspiring confidence in the way they were dressed. And so I decided to believe the guy who was better dressed. When you are confronted with a choice about what to believe, one cannot argue that you've been informed of the truth and therefore that anything that you hold against that truth becomes knowing lies. And knowing lies, I would need evidence that Trump knew, believed in his heart that the election fraud didn't happen. So they talk about the organizing a fraudulent slate of electors, attempting to mimic the procedures that the legitimate electors were supposed to follow under the Constitution and other federal and state laws. This included causing the fraudulent electors to meet on the day appointed by federal law on which legitimate electors... Again, this is all your assumptions. Fraudulent electors, legitimate electors, all of this is your view of the world. Perhaps in Trump's view of the world, and I suspect this is what he will hold in the witness booth, in his view of the world, they were not legitimate electors because they were fed fraudulent data by the people who counted those votes. So the legitimate electors were those who were willing to sign off on the fact that election fraud had been committed. They attempted to use the power and authority of the Justice Department to conduct sham election crime investigations. Again, the problem is in the characterization here. Sham election crime investigations. There is no point at which Trump ordered the DOJ, hey, please do a sham investigation for me. So what's making it a sham? Perhaps Trump wanted them to conduct a legitimate investigation. What is where does the sham come from here? It comes from your interpretation as a prosecutor. It's your belief. It has nothing to do with Trump's belief, and therefore it doesn't qualify as evidence. This should be totally barred. This is all interpretative discussion of not what Trump truly believes, but of what the prosecutor believes. the targeted state's legislature to convene to create the opportunity to choose the fraudulent electors over the legitimate electors. So that was back in the days when Trump was trying to convince the representatives in Congress, the representatives in the state house and state senate, and he was trying to convince them that some fraud had been occurring, and therefore it was their responsibility to dismiss the official results and to include the real results. Again, this is very well explainable by Trump truly believing that there was election fraud. If you knew there was election fraud, wouldn't you call your politicians and say, hey, can you do something about it? Hey, can you pass a law to catch these fraudsters? Because it's happening. That is what Trump has done. It's totally legal to pressure officials of the government to pursue justice in a case where you perceive justice has not been pursued. First, using knowingly false claims of election fraud, the defendant attempted to convince the vice president to use the defendant's fraudulent electors. Again, you have no grounds for knowingly false. You have zero ground to say that Trump knew they were false claims. The only grounds that will be later presented in the document is that some liars were telling Trump, hey, that's false. Well, Trump has the choice to believe them or not, but he's not making a knowingly false statement unless you can prove to me that he knew it was false. And one person coming to him and saying, hey, that's false, is not sufficient. Sometimes you can be convinced by stronger evidence for the other side, even if you have contradictory claims being made by experts. Then there is the gathering of supporters. Falsely told them that the vice president had the authority to and might alter the election results and directed them to the Capitol to obstruct the certification proceeding. So this whole statement is easily explainable by Trump truly believing that that Vice President Pence had this power. And it was an area of legal controversy. You can believe one side or the other. You can believe John Eastman and his theory that it is fair for a vice president to do this, or you can believe someone else, some of the experts that are on CNN. But it's not because you decide on either of these beliefs that you are denying the other side or that you are engaged in falsely representing views. Perhaps it's your true view, and it is definitely Trump's true view, that Vice President Pence could have intervened. And then they claim that the crowd was motivated by these fraudulent claims to basically go commit violence, which delayed the certification of the vote. But on that point, I would say, did Trump order them to obstruct the proceeding, or Trump ordered them to be peaceful, to go protest? Well, he ordered them to go protest, totally in line with the peaceful guarantees of the First Amendment. He told them, go there and protest. Now, the fact that some of them decided to commit violence doesn't make Trump part of a crime or part of a knowing obstruction. So they claim these claims were false, and the defendant knew that they were false, but they have nothing. They have nothing on this point. What I need is a recording of Trump that's like, oh yeah, we're going to lie. Or, yeah, I know that it's false, but I'm still going to say it. I have nothing like this. In fact, the defendant was notified repeatedly that his claims were untrue, often by the people on whom he relied for candid advice on important matters and who were best positioned to know the facts, and he deliberately disregarded the truth. And this is what's important about this whole prosecution. It is a prosecution of expert binding. It's a prosecution that rests on the wrongful assumption that if any expert tells you something, it's the truth. And if you don't believe it, then you're a liar because you now know the truth. But that is not how a fair process should be had for Trump. A fair process for Trump would be to say, are you forced to believe an expert? Is it because one expert told you, oh, that's false, that it becomes false in your mind? Or is there a possibility, is there a liberty elbow for everyone, for every individual in America to decide, well, that is the view of the experts, but my view differs? Because this whole prosecution rests on the fact that, oh, well, there were experts that told him, even experts that he had hired. Doesn't change anything. Someone can decide to totally ignore a bunch of experts and prefer another bunch of experts. You are not bound by the opinion of experts. Mark D's channel says, I'm an expert about experts. Most experts lie when it's convenient. Well, you have brought some great expertise here, Mark D's channel, but I don't believe you. I think you're bullshitting me. I don't believe experts. And you're an expert about experts. The senior leader of the Justice Department, appointed by the defendant and responsible for investigating credible allegations of election crimes, told the defendant on multiple occasions that various allegations of fraud were unsupported. Again, I am not bound to trust these people. I may trust other people. I may trust my own acquisition of data through other means. I may trust alternative media that I'm watching if I'm Trump. The director of national intelligence told Trump that it wouldn't change the outcome of the election. Again, I am not bound to the conclusions of the director of national intelligence. If I have a media that shows me videos of the fraud, it shows me how there were, you take the Project Veritas investigation on the election. Clearly convince me that there is vote harvesting that's happening illegally in the U.S. I have this. I have it on video. I have the person doing the vote vote harvesting for cash and doing it in an illegal way. And explaining that the person knows it's illegal and still doing it, that is more solid evidence than a director of national intelligence coming to me and saying, no, we have looked into all cases of fraud, and believe me, just trust me. It's not enough to explain a difference in the outcome of the election. What do you know about it? How can you quantify how many of the fraudulent votes have gone through the very person and people like them that I saw on Project Veritas? What is your scientific method to know how much of that type of fraud happens? You don't know. No one knows. No one knows. All we can know is, well, the Project Veritas made a beautiful video that's absolutely convincing that some amount of fraud is happening. Trump can very well decide, I'm going to trust the Project Veritas report. I'm going to try to extrapolate it in my mind, knowing just how much money George Soros and the likes are throwing into these dark networks of vote harvesting. And I'm going to believe that it's possible that the election outcome was affected by these mechanisms, rather than believe this director of national intelligence who doesn't have the scientific method to affirm his own conclusion. So if I'm Trump, that's what I believe. That therefore, I'm not knowingly lying to the public or to the official agents. I'm just believing different from you. The Department of Homeland Security, Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency told Trump the same thing. Well, again, Trump is not bound to listen to the Homeland Security, the senior White House attorneys, the senior staffers of the re-election campaign, the state legislators on an official, and the state and federal courts. This is the fundamental problem of this lawsuit. It's not because a bunch of people tell you something that you have to believe it. That is the non sequitur that they're doing in this lawsuit. Well, you got told by all these experts that it was false. That is still not a demonstration that within Trump's heart, it was false. In fact, nothing points to this. Everything points to Trump truly believing what he's been saying for years. The defendant insinuated that more than 10,000 dead voters had voted in Georgia. And here, again, the problem is you have to believe that the defendant acting attorney general and acting deputy attorney general had explained to him that this was false. Is he bound to believe the attorney general on this? Or can he believe other reports? Can he make his own mind about this? Dude says, "Wow, Papa Jeff, read my first free chat, please." I read it. But your first free chat was said before this. And it said, "Imagine if Trump was guaranteed pre-2005. It changes a lot." Well, I'm going to let you off the hook because it's your first free chat. But you have to learn to express yourself better, bro. It's not even clear what you mean. If Trump was pre-2005 guaranteed pre-2005, is there anyone in the chat who understands what this crazy person means? Because I'm about to sue him for conspiracy to lie to JF. I think he knowingly is making chats that don't make sense to just fuck my brain up. Dinolgovich says, "Be brutal, JF. This isn't kindergarten. I'm contacting my lawyers right now." He is knowingly trying to confuse me. The defendant claimed that there had been tens of thousands of double votes in an other fraud in Nevada. But the Nevada Secretary of State had previously rebutted the defendant's fraud claims by publicly posting a Facts versus Smith document, explaining that Nevada judges had reviewed and rejected them. Again, you are not bound to follow the legal opinion of courts and judges. It's not because a judge decides something or a secretary of state publishes a little pamphlet that it becomes the truth. It certainly doesn't become the truth in Trump's heart. And so no demonstration here, totally insufficient. The Speaker of the Arizona House of Representatives, who had supported the defendant in the election, had issued a public statement that there was no evidence of substantial fraud in Arizona. Well, again, and now they're trying to say, okay, maybe these experts Trump didn't believe because they were not his friend, but This guy is a Republican, and he was saying there was no fraud. Trump is not bound to believe what another Republican believes. Trump is not bound to believe someone because he was previously a friend to him. You are no more bound to the opinion of experts than you are bound to the opinion of your friends. What the fuck? Like, what kind of mindset do you need to be in to come up with a prosecution like this? You have to be in the mindset that of state-determined truth, basically. No matter what the judge says, you may be shut down in the judicial proceeding. The judge may decide that what you say is false, and the judge may say, you can't say this anymore in this proceeding. But when you get out of a court process or a Supreme Court hearing, you are totally free to believe that everything the judge said is bullshit. And that is not to lie. That is not to divert from the truth. It is to develop your own truth. You have the freedom to differ from the state's conclusion on anything in this country. The defendant's attorney general, acting attorney general, and acting deputy attorney general all had explained to him that this was false, and numerous recounts and audits had confirmed the accuracy of voting machines. You are not bound to attorney generals and what they believe. You are the president of the United States. You have absolute authority over everything that you believe. And it's not because there is an audit that's been happening that you have to be convinced by the audits. There are serious questions about whether audits are sufficient at all, whether they could detect the kind of fraud we're talking about. Because the kind of fraud we're thinking is pre-machine fraud of the kind that would actually insert the false vote in the machine so that if you recount them in a month, you're going to get the same count, but you're counting fraudulent votes. The kind of fraud we're talking about is the illegal funding of vote harvesting operations and mail-in voting operations that are illegal. Again, you can recount them. They're still illegal, but you're going to include the illegal ones in your count. So you don't have to be satisfied by an audit. An audit is not binding on every individual so that they are forced to believe in it. So at some point, Trump demands evidence to one of his aides. The aide doesn't come back with evidence. Eventually, the Arizona House Speaker refuses to do what Trump request, stating that doing so would require a two-thirds vote of its members, and he would not allow it without actual evidence of fraud. Well, okay, that's Trump trying to convince a politician to do something, and the politician saying, I can't do this. That is very far from any sort of conspiracy to commit a crime. For evidence, and that is one of the standards that is omnipresent in this lawsuit. Evidence of the outcome determinative election fraud. They always use this phrasing. But outcome determinative election fraud is like asking for something that may never be attained. In the sense that you can prove that this guy committed fraud. You can prove that this girl was doing vote harvesting. You can prove with the Project Veritas method of hidden cameras, okay, this girl has done about 1,000 vote harvest, and therefore she has had that impact on the election. But most of the time, you're never going to get to the full count. You're never going to prove that there are 200,000 cases of individual votes that have been fraudulent. And yet, that is the standard that you would use in a lawsuit to contest an election. But that is not the standard for which that applies to the belief of Trump in his heart. Trump in his heart can very well say, I've seen enough. I've seen one case of fraud. It convinces me that the system is fraudulent, and I reject the outcome of the election. You can develop that belief, even if that belief wouldn't be enough to win a lawsuit in an election contest. That may be enough with your rationality, with Trump's interpretation of these facts, to say, all right, I've seen 5 cases of fraud on video, well captured, well documented. I believe there must be 1 million others that we failed at documenting. That could be Trump's legitimate belief, which would make this whole lawsuit fall. Because if Trump is legitimately believing that there's been election fraud, then all of his actions are explained. So they call the Arizona White House Speaker to urge him to use a majority of the legislature to decertify the state's legitimate electors Arizona's validly ascertained electors. You can totally ask a politician, could you vote for this? I mean, I could literally ask for a politician, could you vote against the murder laws? And I wouldn't have committed a conspiracy to circumvent murder laws. I would have made pressure, as it is described in the First Amendment. I would have made a request by voice to the government. I would have expressed a concern to the government. I want to change murder laws. I think that murder laws are too severe. Am I committing a conspiracy for murder right now? No. I'm trying to change the state of law because I perceive that there's something wrong about it. Well, that's exactly what Trump was doing there. Trying to pressure legislators into directing the law in one direction rather than another. So at some point he gets a message from his aide. Just for your information, a campaign lawyer and his team verified that the 10K plus supposed dead people voting in Georgia is not accurate. It was alleged in co-conspirators one's hearing today. So Trump is faced with different people telling him different thing. One is saying, oh yeah, there's 10,000 dead people who voted. Another is saying, oh yeah, we checked that claim, it's false. Trump is free to believe whoever he wants. It's not because he's been informed by some liar that they believe it's false that he has to adhere to that belief. Experts don't own Trump's brain. And that's ultimately what the leftists are taking issue with. The defendant issued a tweet amplifying the knowingly false claims. Well, again, if Trump tweets about it, it just means that he's not been convinced by his lawyer. He's not been convinced by lawyer two. He preferred the explanation of lawyer one. That is not Trump lying. That is Trump having made a choice on his belief. At one point, one of his aides complains and he says, when our research and campaign legal team can't back up any of the claims made by our elite strike force legal team, you can see why we're 0-32 on our cases. I'll obviously hustle to help on all fronts, but it's tough to own any of this when it's all just conspiracy shit beamed down from the mothership. So someone on Trump's team was convinced that it was bullshit, that Trump's theories and his facts were not reliable. That doesn't bind Trump. That may be the opinion of this guy, that it was conspiratorial bullshit. Trump may have believed something else. Co-conspirator pled the State Farm Arena video and falsely claimed that it showed voter fraud right in front of people's eyes and was the tip of the iceberg. Quite obviously, surreptitiously passing around USB ports as if they are vials of heroin or cocaine. I remember that video. I mean, it was a worrying video where clearly you see an election worker going to the table of another election worker and they're like, they give a USB key. And it's very clear that they felt they were handling something secret here. Now, you can take it as you wish. You can say that's not evidence of election fraud. That was the belief of some of the officials. They said, oh yeah, we looked at this video and it's benign. But that's your belief as an official. Trump can look at this video and say, wow, that's worrying. I mean, why so sneaky? Why so sneaky? And Trump is free to reach his own conclusion about this video. Been made aware that some of the allegations and evidence proffered by the experts has been inaccurate, and that signing a new affirmation with that knowledge and incorporation by reference would not be accurate. So here they are preparing to file a document in court. That may be the only place in this lawsuit where if they can prove that, maybe Trump did something illegal. So what they claim is they were about to submit a paper in court, and a co-conspirator, maybe a lawyer, comes in and says, oh yeah, I've had new knowledge, and what we're about to submit in court, that statement here, that would be false. And so if we update this document, we would be forced to indicate that it's false. So are you sure you want to update this document? Perhaps we're just better filing it the way it is. That way we can argue that it was written before. If there was such a discussion in which basically Trump was agreeing to file something that he knew was false and sign something that he knew was false, that could be a form of perjury. That could be a form of lying to the court. But Trump is not being sued for perjury. So, see, bizarrely, the only case that I find to cross the threshold of potential sufficiency, that is not a count. That is not a count that he's being sued for. So while this may suffice to say, oh, something dirty happened with Trump's signature here, that would not be a conspiracy to obstruct rights. It would be at best, a conspiracy for perjury. I think that Trump will come up with an explanation that makes sense against this, and that it's very possible that the prosecution will fail to demonstrate. Because it's a strong claim, this idea that Trump would have been in a discussion in which they say, oh yeah, that's a lie. And Trump would somewhat maybe implicitly agreeing to publish that lie or file that lie in court. Not sure what they're going to do with this, but let's point out that this is just the document of the prosecution. We haven't heard a word from Trump yet. It's very easy for a defendant to come in and explain away a lot of the things that may seem bizarre in the initial interpretation of a prosecutor. And the Georgia Secretary of State's counsel explained to him that the claim had been investigated and was not true. Trump isn't bound by the Georgia Secretary of State's conclusion. Same thing here. It's all the Georgia Secretary of State telling him. Here they claim that Trump has made some sort of threat. So Trump calls the Georgia Secretary of State, and he says, and you are going to find that they are, which is totally illegal. It's more illegal for you than it is for them, because you know what? They did, and you're not reporting it. That's a criminal. You know, that's a criminal offense. And you know, you can't let that happen. That's a big risk to you and to the Georgia Secretary of State's counsel, your lawyer. So Trump here is reminding the Georgia Secretary of State, Don't turn a blind eye to fraud, because don't forget that if you do, you are committing a crime. I don't think it's going to qualify as a conspiracy to obstruct rights. At best, if you had a case of extortion, I would say this perhaps could meet the standard for extortion. But again, it's not in the count. Trump is not being sued for perjury, not being sued for extortion. So this on its own, it may qualify. If you can make a case that Trump was in the mindset of forcing the Georgia Secretary of State to do something wrong, maybe you would have a case for extortion, but not a case for conspiracy against rights. Was unwilling or unable to answer questions such as the ballots under the table. He has no clue. So that's Trump concluding after his discussion with the Georgia Secretary of State. Basically, I am not satisfied with what he's told me. I still believe there was election fraud. So there you go. You have the Trump mindset. They do the same with the Michigan case. Michigan House Speaker making this statement that there was no election fraud. Well, what if Trump's decided to not believe him? Again, they use the term knowingly false statement when they have no evidence that Trump knew. They have plenty of evidence that people told Trump that it was false. They have no evidence that Trump was convinced that it was false. Looks like Georgia may well hold some factual hearings and change the certification under Article 2, blah, blah, blah. As they explain, they just don't have the right to do it, but the obligation, help me get this done in Michigan. So that is an aide of, that is a collaborator of Trump trying to explain to a, to the legislature, to the House Speaker, hey, we have this plan to have alternate electors that will contest the legitimacy of the regular electors. We need your help. Can you do something at the legal level? I think you have a responsibility to do it. That's people invoking legal responsibilities. This is not the language of criminals. This is the language of people truly convinced that they are enacting the will of the U.S. Constitution. It's all similar things. Philadelphia City Commissioner receives death threats. Again, if I'm critical of the Philadelphia City Commissioner and someone else that I don't know sends death threat to him, am I responsible? Have I just sent death threat? No, I didn't. I have contested something that he's done publicly. If someone else sends death threat, that is not my responsibility. That's the situation Trump finds himself with. Each time the Justice Department officials inform the defendant that his claim was false, he's not forced to believe the Justice Department officials. It is all this over and over again. They then talk about the plan to have fake electors. They describe a memo by probably, I think that this person is John Eastman, although he's not named, saying, we have our electors sending their votes, even though the votes aren't legal under federal law because they're not signed by the governor, just so that members of Congress can fight about whether they should be counted on January 6th. They could potentially argue that they're not bound by federal law because they're Congress and make the law, etc. Kind of wild slash creative. I'm happy to discuss. My comment to him was that I guess there's no harm in it, legally at least, i.e. we would just be sending in fake electoral votes to Pence so that someone in Congress can make an objection when they start counting votes and start arguing that the fake votes should be counted. So that is an aide of Trump that is not Trump, who used in a very, let's say, informal setting, used the word fake to describe the alternative electors. First, it's not Trump, so it doesn't tell me anything about the state of belief of Trump. It tells me that this guy in the team of Trump was referring to this slate of electors as fake. And he was saying fake in quotation mark. So that's not fake. If you truly believe they are fake, you wouldn't put quotation mark. So even that guy, it's not clear that he believes they're fake. But certainly none of this shows that Trump believes they are fake. At some point, someone in the team, maybe John Eastman, says to Trump, it could appear treasonous. Well, says to actually not Trump, but co-conspirator one, which is probably Giuliani. It could appear treasonous for the AZ electors to vote on Monday if there is no pending court proceedings. And they suggest this is evidence that they knew what they were doing was treason. Appear treasonous is not the same as treasonous, first. Second, this is a discussion that Trump is not in. It's a discussion between potentially John Eastman and Giuliani that doesn't involve Trump. So no proof of the state of mind of Trump. Deputy campaign manager responded at some point, here's the thing, that the way this has morphed, it's a crazy place, so I don't know who wants to put their name on it. Certifying illegal votes. In turn, the participants in the group text message refused to have a statement regarding electors attributed to their names because none of them could stand by it. Okay, so you have someone in the Trump team having doubts about the plan. You have a bunch of electors who are fagging away, as we say in the pimp business. None of this shows me that Trump believed the same, that Trump believed this plan was not sound. And here they interpret that they filed a lawsuit in New Mexico 6 minutes before the noon deadline for the electors' vote as a pretext so that there was pending litigation. You are interpreting it as a pretext. Maybe Trump was motivated by very noble desires of doing justice with this lawsuit. You say it's a pretext. Do I have evidence that Trump believed it was a pretext? No. Trump is being passed on some information. Okay. They discussed the plan of Trump to replace the acting deputy attorney general to place someone in position that could help him. And he asks the attorney general, just say that the election was corrupt and leave the rest to me and the Republican congressman. That doesn't sound like a conspiracy to commit a crime here. That sounds like Trump is saying, just say your opinion that it is corrupt in general, the election process, and the rest is a political fight. We'll handle it in Congress. We'll have some Republican House representatives will contest the validity of the vote. But I want you to just say your opinion publicly. That makes total sense. Now, whether it was the actual opinion of the Attorney General is challenged, but the fact that Trump invites him to express this as his opinion is not a fraud, it's not a lie, it's not an obstruction. It's just Trump's encouraging him to say that the election was defrauded. But then it turns out, well, the acting deputy attorney general does not believe this. So he refuses to publish the statement. That's okay. I can ask you, hey, Dino Legovich, could you say on the regular chat right now that prostitution is okay? And then you could come back to me and say, Jeff, I don't believe that prostitution is okay. I think prostitution is bad. Did I force you? Did I obstruct you? Did I do anything wrong to you? No, I didn't. I invited you to express something and you correct me. You say, Jeff, that's not what I believe. That's what happened in the Trump discussion here. Nothing illegal. They discuss at some point, well, if Trump, there is no world, there is no option in which you do not leave the White House on January 20th. That is one of his cucked liars saying that to Trump, the White House counsel. Because he says, you know, if you stay in the White House on January 20th, there will be riots on the streets. And a friend of Trump says, well, that's why there's an insurrection act. This doesn't involve Trump at all. So it's not valid evidence for this trial. But it's funny to see that, you know, someone was like in the White House, there's going to be riots everywhere. And someone says, well, we have the Insurrection Act. We can squash this revolution. I love how chill this guy was. Eventually, Trump gives up on his plan to replace the attorney general because he's told, you know, all of the higher ups of the Department of Justice, they will all mass resign, you know, to show their ideological resistance to your decision. So at some point, he comes on January 3, I believe, And he says, yeah, it's getting pretty late to, you know, to do all of this legal process. What we're going to do is we're going to try to keep it going, but we're going to leave this to the next guy. In the sense that, okay, well, we're getting very close to January 6th, January 20. Now, they interpret this as, see, Trump knew that it was over. Well, no, that's Trump resigning on the face of the legal complexities and admitting that at this point, we're getting way too close to the date to have impacts through investigation of specific case frauds. And so that's, at this point, Trump's strategy reverts to, let's have public pressure. Let's have people protesting at the Capitol. And it makes total sense from a totally legal interpretation that Trump sends his fans to the Capitol to make a peaceful statement to the legislature. A peaceful statement that says we are not satisfied that the election was fair. So in conclusion, and that's it. I mean, show me all of the violence of January 6th. That's what they do at the end of the prosecution. This doesn't concern Trump. In fact, there is a very dishonest interpretation made of a Trump statement at the end, which tells me this prosecutor is lying. This prosecutor is intentionally misinterpreting stuff that cannot be interpreted in the way he does or she does. I don't know. Because look at this. This is the prosecutor's interpretation of Trump's statement. Instead, the defendant issued two tweets that did not ask rioters to leave the Capitol, but instead falsely suggested that the crowd at the Capitol was being peaceful. Including, and so let's cut it out here. I don't want to show you the Trump statement, but what are the two elements that the prosecutor suggests is in those statements? He says those statements, Trump is not asking the rioters to leave the Capitol, and Trump is falsely suggesting that the crowd at the Capitol is peaceful. Now let's look at the statement. Are these two elements ticked off? So that's the first Trump tweet. Please support our Capitol Police and law enforcement. They are truly on the side of our country. Stay peaceful. That is Trump telling to his base. He's not saying, you guys are very peaceful. There is absolutely no violence happening among you guys right now. He's saying, stay peaceful. The way I would talk to you and say, oh yeah, when you go out at night, stay peaceful. He's not saying, oh, you are currently being totally peaceful. He's saying, you know, as you engage in that process of protest, please stay peaceful. Now, the dishonesty of the interpretation revolves around the word stay here. The prosecutor is saying, well, stay implies that they were already peaceful and that they just had to continue being peaceful. But stay peaceful is a saying that doesn't mean this at all. You can say stay peaceful tonight and the event hasn't even begun. So you're not implying anything about the current state of peacehood. You are just invoking a future state that is desirable of peacehood. And the second statement, I am asking for everyone at the U.S. Capitol to remain peaceful. Now, remain, that has more of that meaning. Remain, that would mean that they were peaceful. But the vast majority, anyway, has always been peaceful. And the people that were at the Capitol, the vast majority were outside the Capitol just protesting legally. No violence. Remember, we are the party of law and order. Respect the law and our great men and women in blue. Thank you. So here, what the prosecutor is trying to imply to the jury is to say, The fact that he didn't ask them to leave the Capitol is evidence of Trump's desire that they stay in and that therefore they continue blocking the election process. That is it's a proof by the negative. Oh, you haven't said this, therefore you believe that. You should never be found guilty of a crime for not doing something. The only exception to this being neglect and reckless conduct. But you should not be found guilty of a conspiracy because you failed at doing something. Basically, what the prosecutor is implying is these statements were not strong enough. They were so not strong enough that we are convinced that deep inside, Trump wanted the democratic process to be physically and violently blocked. And that's why he made these invocation of staying peaceful, but he didn't do them strong enough because he didn't tell them to get out of the Capitol. Well, at this point, Trump can very well answer, I didn't know that there was such a crowd inside the Capitol that it was keeping the process from continuing. He can claim, well, I knew there were people inside, but I didn't think that my appealing to them would make them get out. So if there were people inside, they needed to be gotten out by the police of the Capitol, by the army. But I didn't think that my words could influence them. Because if they were inside, it was already against my orders and my counseling. Because as I was in the public discourse, I had said on the public stage, I had said, don't go inside, just go peacefully protest. And so I didn't have an impact on these rioters. Trump can very well explain all of this away, just like the rest of the of the case. And so it's a very weak prosecution. I hope that Trump will win it in a quick manner, but it's legal harassment and it's all meant to create an aura of doubt around Trump. So guys, that is it for tonight. It was a longer review than I expected, but it was a 40-page indictment, more than 45. Is that pre-programming or is that, I look at this now, is that a message of the prosecution? Like a little wink to Trump, you are the 45th president, and here's 45 pages of legal harassment. Is it possible that it's like a kick in the nuts that he's trying to do? Go away, says Jeff. I put my last bet on Trump to win on 23rd of December 2020, a $500 bet. In total, I lost over $6,000 on 2020 election. In Australia, you have to put live bets over the phone. And after the November election day, bookies treated the election as a live event. It was humiliating. Fuck Trump for giving me false hope. Well, now we get the explanation for why Go Away doesn't pay super chats. He merely trolls through the regular chat, the free regular chat. If you were to stop wasting money on betting on Trump and bet on Papa JF, if you had sent this super chat to Papa JF, in money to Papa JF, I would have delivered an answer to your super chat, and you would have had something for your money. Shrink Mamel has sent a super chat. He says, JF, my girlfriend broke up with me yesterday, so I went out with a very cute bartender. I went out on a date to go bowling with her earlier today. We didn't even bowl. We just talked for an hour. We then fucked. The sex I had was great with her. However, I felt so empty afterwards. Bro, I have the highest respect for what you just did. You need to recover from a past relationship as soon as possible because there you are trying to set a future for your family. And these fucking women are losing months of your life. And, oh, I don't feel it anymore. You did it. You did it. You had a full recovery from losing your current state of couple to getting back into it within 24 hours. The perfect circle. The perfect cycle. Keep doing it, Shrink Mamel. I know it's hard for the emotions and the feelings. Leave that aside. You have a mission, baby making, and you're on your way to do it. Fuck this bartender again and without a condom.
Thank you.